Are nuclear bombs truly weapons of mass destruction, or are they really just weapons of mass deception? Footage of alleged nuclear explosions, when analyzed with a critical eye, reveal undeniable evidence of photo trickery. In much of the early black and white test footage, filmed in the 50s and 60s, and shown on newsreels and fear-mongering films, it is clear we are looking at fake model sets complete with miniature houses, vehicles, and trees. Notice the unrealistic and unnatural perfect rows of disproportionately thin trees. After the flimsy model trees are blown to one side, the film quickly cuts to clips of actual trees in some other location. Similar to how a stunt double changes with the main actor during the crucial action scene, these clips intersperse or sometimes superimpose footage of models with reality. The first H-bomb test, known as Ivy Mike, looks more like some stop-motion lava lamps than an explosion. Many other supposed nuclear tests appear to mix sped-up footage of sunrises with real explosions to give the effect of a much bigger blast. Footage from Operation Dominic appears to show a sunrise with the brightness slider rising in post-production. Suspiciously, in some videos, the explosions are so violent as to obliterate entire houses in an instant, but yet the camera filming right next to the house survives unscathed and unshook. The blast often comes from behind the camera, and not, as they claim, from a protected location far outside the blast radius. Someone moves the camera just before and during some of the blasts, and the camera is positioned at an oddly unrealistic height. What kind of shielded tower would the camera and cameraman have to be enclosed in to survive such a test? If nuclear bombs actually exist, why would there be a need to fake footage of nuclear explosions? The Trinity and other nuclear test sites were admittedly first loaded with hundreds or up to 1,000 tons of dynamite. Footage exists showing military men stacking gigantic piles of TNT and dynamite at nuclear testing sites. The official reason for this was claimed as, quote, comparative purposes, where the blast from hundreds of tons of stacked TNT would be compared to the nuclear bomb. With each team sent to separate islands, each stacking piles of explosives, but both told that the other island would have the actual bomb, it would be simple to deceive the very men creating the deception. Mushroom clouds are not unique to so-called nuclear weapons and can be formed with enough TNT, dynamite, regular bombs, and other explosive materials. Later, supposed nuclear tests, like Able, were likely done using very large, but traditional bombs, and the Baker test, done using hundreds of tons of submerged dynamite in a vessel underwater. Nuclear fission occurs by bombarding uranium-238 with neutrons to split the nucleus and create the isotope uranium-235. During this split, mass is lost and converted into kinetic energy, which is known as nuclear fission. If each of those neutrons then goes into another uranium nucleus, causing more fission and many more neutrons, this creates a theoretical process known as an explosive nuclear reaction. Enrico Fermi's famous nuclear chain reaction test was done by stacking massive amounts of graphite and embedding balls of uranium within, so that when the neutrons started flying through, they would be slowed by the graphite, collide with the uranium, release more neutrons, and then those neutrons would continue in a chain reaction pattern. This achievement, which was only detectable by Geiger counter, meant that the fission process could be sustained, but in no way proved the possibility of a nuclear explosive chain reaction. In reality, all explosions are gas-related. For an explosive chain reaction to occur, there would need to be an explosive gas created or added. The byproducts of nuclear fission are 94% heat and 6% radiation. No gas whatsoever is produced by nuclear fission, and so there can be no massive destructive blast. Furthermore, to achieve intense heat from nuclear fission, millions of atoms need to be split in a chain reaction, which requires a moderator to slow down free neutrons. No such moderator is included in nuclear bombs, and even if it were, there is no test evidence that even this would result in an explosion. Recently declassified minutes of the Manhattan Project's interim committee meeting on May 31, 1945, reveal that America had insufficient uranium to build the atom bombs supposedly used on Japan just a few months later. Dr. Compton, director of the Met Lab at University of Chicago, who oversaw production of enriched uranium and plutonium for the bombs, was quoted stating it would take another 3 years to produce the amount needed for the bombs. Yet just over 3 months later, America supposedly successfully produced and deployed two on Japan without being tested. Enrico Fermi stated they would need 0.5 to 1 ton of enriched material to create a nuclear bomb. Natural uranium metal contains concentrations of 99% U-238, 0.7% U-235, and 0.3% U-234. Therefore, to obtain 1 metric ton of U-235, you need 142.8 metric tons of natural uranium. And for each metric ton of natural uranium, you need approximately 1,000 tons of uranium ore. Supplies of such uranium ore are certainly not unlimited, and especially in the 1940s, were in short supply. The Manhattan Project Interim Committee minutes specifically mentioned that even reactor-grade uranium was in short supply and wouldn't suffice. Yet just 3 months later, the bombs were somehow ready and dropped. The footage we were shown of the supposed nuclear blasts at Hiroshima and Nagasaki show what appear to be 2 superimposed smoke plumes atop one another, in an attempt to make the mushroom cloud look larger. Rather than making the blast look bigger, however, it looks more like some secondary blast began mid-air. The footage of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki explosions look very different from the many other test examples shown previously, each of which also looked very different from one another. In reality, Hiroshima and Nagasaki were firebombed, just like Tokyo and many other Japanese cities. When footage of the aftermath is analyzed, it is clear that the destruction is consistent with traditional carpet bombing and not from a single nuclear explosion. If the damage shown in footage from the aftermath of Hiroshima and Nagasaki was actually from these nuclear bombs, there would be a single central circular blast radius showing the most destruction at the center point, with gradually less expanding outwards. The debris and direction of destruction should all face outwards from this central location, and there should be an obvious blast crater at the site of impact. In World War II propaganda films, you can see footage of scientists pointing to the exact spot where the nuclear bomb supposedly landed on Hiroshima. Yet the area looks no different than any other, and has no discernible blast crater. The damage immediately around the point of impact is no worse or more pronounced than anywhere else. The destruction found throughout the two cities is in fact consistent with traditional firebombing, with all smaller wooden buildings decimated and only a few larger stone and reinforced concrete structures still standing. The propaganda films claim to show buildings with windows blown in one side and out the other, or Hiroshima Bridge having the paint burnt off only one side. But these examples are clearly cherry-picked to give the illusion of a single blast, when the overall destruction is similar to every other firebombed Japanese city. There is also no evidence of long-term radiation damage anywhere in Hiroshima or Nagasaki. According to the experts, there was to be radiation and nuclear fallout for thousands of years, affecting people, plants, animals, and every living thing in the vicinity, causing generational deformities and a veritable death zone. In reality, however, flowers, grass, and other plants started growing back within a month, and radiation levels have dropped in both cities, recovering to normality within years. Hiroshima and Nagasaki are now bustling modern cities, 80 years later, with no remnant of nuclear destruction. The people there are not all born with deformities or chronic ailments, and there is no dangerous radiation or fallout to beware. Radiation exists and remains present in an area after any and every explosion, not just supposed nuclear ones. So if you drop a bunch of bombs or blast a ton of dynamite and bring a Geiger counter, you will certainly register radiation, but it will not linger for centuries or millennia like nuclear radiation is claimed to do. As for the explosions which occurred at nuclear power plants like Chernobyl and Fukushima, these were gas explosions caused by the buildup of hydrogen and not nuclear explosions. In fact, it is impossible for a nuclear explosion to occur at a nuclear power plant, only gas explosions. Today, in Fukushima, you get more radiation from the backscatter scanners at the airport security gates than you do from their so-called nuclear disaster. The way nuclear power works is essentially just using hot radioactive material to boil water and generate steam, which drives turbines and creates electricity. One of the leading nuclear physicists in America, Galen Windsor, who was responsible for helping set up most of America's nuclear power plants, was a vocal whistleblower on this subject. He said nuclear power is really just the cleanest and most economical way to boil water, and that all nuclear power plants are essentially and practically just steam power plants. In his lecture tours he gave all across the country, Galen Windsor would talk about how he and other early nuclear physicists would regularly hold uranium, plutonium, and radioactive waste with their bare hands without any ill effects. He quipped about taking swims in the nuclear waste pools to prove they weren't hazardous, and when his colleagues refused to believe him, he began drinking a glass of water from the pools in front of them every day. In footage from his lectures, you can watch Galen open a tiny canister of radioactive material, supposedly dangerous enough to cause an EPA disaster area 1 mile in radius, contaminating everyone in the building. He holds it in his bare hands, runs a Geiger counter over it, which registers off the scale, licks all the radioactive material onto his tongue, tests it with the Geiger counter again, and swallows it. Galen Windsor did this demonstration for years, with no ill effects, and lived into his 80s. After trying to blow the whistle with his lecture tours, the government confiscated his nuclear material, sent the SWAT team to his house, and began harassing him legally. He was quoted saying, "There is no such thing as nuclear waste, only material created in a nuclear reactor to be recovered and used beneficially. High-level waste is radioactive and self-heating, and so reusable uranium fuel fits that definition. But if you disregard its intrinsic worth, then it would fit the definition of high-level waste. But let's say there is no high-level waste, and only material to be recovered and used beneficially. Then what's the low-level waste fiasco? That's an excuse for a federally mandated, non-inspectable disposal system so that organized crime can get rid of any evidence they want, and it can never be dug up again. There are allegedly stainless steel containers buried in concrete under the ocean, boiling with hot radioactive material for 2,000 years. The production, storage, transportation, and disposal of nuclear materials is incredibly expensive and secretive. Protocols for dealing with nuclear waste materials involve allegedly burying it deep into the Earth's bedrock through such extensive, expensive procedures. In reality, as Galen Windsor showed, these nuclear materials are not nearly as hazardous or toxic as they are made out to be, and the over-the-top, secretive disposal methods likely double as black budget, black op covers. It provides the military-industrial complex a never-ending blank check for themselves to dip into taxpayer money. At many times during the nuclear arms race, America spent upwards of $50 million per day on nuclear weapons-related expenses, nearly rivaling NASA's huge budget. It is no doubt that incredibly high-powered ballistics, bombs, and missiles all exist, but the specific claim of nuclear weapons and nuclear explosions, which require fission, a nuclear chain reaction, and result in destruction on a scale far beyond conventional weaponry, is patently false. Nuclear fission simply does not produce any kind of gas necessary for such an explosion, and no moderator to slow down free neutrons is included in nuclear weapons. Declassified documents suggest the American government was years from having enough U-235 to produce the bombs allegedly dropped on Japan. Film analysis of Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and nuclear test footage show countless anomalies pointing towards photo trickery and deceptive wartime propaganda. Radiation levels quickly dropped, and the destruction attributed to two nuclear explosions looked no different from the neighboring towns and cities destroyed by aerial firebombing runs. The stories of the little boy and fat man bombs were just the myths necessary to create the scaremongering Cold War arms race that would soon begin. The threat of any nation being able to push a button and destroy entire cities or countries is a perfect, terrifying excuse for America to enter and make war with anyone that supposedly harbors or develops nuclear weapons. Since the early tests, alleged nuclear explosions have continued to get larger and larger, while the payload continues getting smaller and smaller, to the point we are now supposed to believe that they can be carried in a suitcase. Teaching generations of children to duck and cover, hiding under their desks, has now instilled fear of a boogeyman just as bogus as the one under their beds.